got it. Here we go. Let's get Tom in here. Guess a door, any door, Ursula. You're always right.
Door number three.
Yes, absolutely.
Bingo.
You guys work that out ahead of time. I hate when you do that. It's called collusion. Look it up. K-L.
That's why Trump doesn't think he's guilty of it. He's misspelling it all this time.
See? All right, here we go. Celebrating yesterday. People finally got a win. How'd you feel yesterday after all the hoopla? When we went off the air, city council got a chance to renege on the poor homeless people that they were pouring money over. How'd you feel overall? Did you feel like the because you always say that the government, we are the government, that nonsense. Did you feel that the government win or the people won or did the people win, the government loses? And ultimately, how did you feel, Tom?
I felt like it was a mixed bag, basically. As we talked about this yesterday, the problem is that I think people that are fighting the head tax are feeling triumphant. But the problem is they're feeling triumphant without fixing the problem that the head tax was addressing, which is the homelessness issue. So I hope we don't drop the ball. Uh-huh. I was cheered to hear Amazon VP yesterday say, hey, listen, we are all in on trying to, you know, fix the homeless problem in Seattle. We are not abandoning that kind of ethical stance. And I think that's good. If the business community commits to doing this and actually figuring out a way
to solve it.
Well,
you pointed to Fair Start in Mary's place.
Yes, but that is not big enough to deal with the massive problem. We have 12,000 homeless in the King County region.
Right.
How are we going to do that? And the fact is that the businesses are willing to commit, then I think that's okay.
Uh-huh.
Remember, we had a task force that came up and looked at all these various versions of what's the most efficient way. Their recommendation after months and months of study was to go with the head tax. Clearly, that caught a headwind that blew back on the face of the city council.
Yeah.
And so now if we can figure out a better way, nobody wants to do something that's ineffective. The idea is, can we actually figure out a way that is effective without dinging Amazon and anybody else?
Right.
Somebody's going to get dinged,
right.
I suspect.
I see. So Starbucks, when the thing first got proposed, somebody from Starbucks says, hey, why don't you look at the research that you did when you hired that expert from the Obama administration when she said you already have enough funds?
That's right.
You're just disorganized.
Yes.
And when Amazon even said, I don't think it's a revenue problem, I think it's an expense problem.
That's
you have
right.
a spending problem. And I think that's the same message that was sent to 45,000 people that signed the petition. They're basically saying, you know what? Try to fix it with what you got, rather than having us pour money, more money into a broken system. Maybe the
yes.
bucket itself has a hole in it.
Yes, but the problem is there is a bucket that has a hole that needs patching, but it also needs more water in the bucket as well. It's a combination of those kinds of things. That's why I just hope that.
No, but if you patch, but here's the thing, Tom. If you patch the hole,
yes.
you'd have enough water.
No, but you don't.
What they do, well, yes, you do because
dispute.
They
no.
Tom,
okay, well, that's what we're arguing about. Then,
okay.
ultimately is that because that one person came out with a recommendation. There've been a lot of studies since then that say, no, that's not nearly
what
enough.
One person?
The person that ended up the Obama hire that
Barbara,
said,
Barbara
you've got Pulpy. enough money here to deal with it. They say since then, the homeless problem has gotten much worse.
Uh-huh.
And so that is no longer adequate. And so the idea is we're going to use this money to spend on affordable housing and low-income housing.
I see.
And that's what we need to do. However, I think Jenny Durkin is playing this smart.
Ah.
Because she comes out and says, okay, I do, you know, we've heard the blowback, and so we need to focus on results. Not on the money, but on the results, and convince the people that whatever money we're taking
that
from
we're being
will be
efficient.
More effective.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's what a novel idea that you're actually going to be responsible and show whether or not you are effective with the money being given.
Well,
that I think was the main protest
2 years ago. Yes, no,
main
I know.
Protest it's, was look, you guys suck. The amount of money we've given you, you continue
yes.
to spend more and more and more money, and the number of homeless continues to go up and up and up.
That's right.
If we give you more money, apparently we'll get more homeless. That seems to be the pattern that we have developed here in Seattle.
But see, that's a false equivalence. It might be the case
okay.
that maybe we're spending more money and we're clipping whatever homeless problem was existing 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, we all have homeless issues on the West Coast, and we all have different kind of city dynamics, city government dynamics. Why is that?
Yeah.
The money that's being spent can be more efficiently spent, but that doesn't mean it's enough to deal with this growing problem. Why is there a growing problem? A lot of it has to do with the disruption of the booming economy
yeah.
that places like Seattle and San Francisco are going through.
L.A. sent us 10,000 of their homeless in the last 6 years. Let's see. Here's Reverend Cecily Kingman testifying. She says she's been sheltering people in a church parking lot. This is the people, I guess, spoke just before the vote.
We have homeless families sleeping in the parking lot every night. We have children sleeping in the parking lot. This is a sin in such a rich area as ours. And I believe we have a moral imperative to give all our families a home, all our children homes. Housing is a human right, and I demand in the name of the poor and the Poor People's Campaign and all that is holy that you do not only not repeal but strengthen this plan.
Yeah, housing is not a human right. She saw no excuse.
It could be.
Okay, then, so if somebody gets a right to one house, so then you start to determine, well, you have a right to a house. Let's say you have a right to a car.
Some housing.
What kind of a car? What kind of a house?
They didn't say car. Housing.
Anytime a right.
Affordable housing, John.
Right. A right cannot
low-income be. Low-income housing.
Well, what's affordable for one and not affordable for someone else? You can't make it a right, just like health care is not a right, because you're basically saying.
Well, we can choose it to be our right. I mean, in other words, we are demanding that with the humans being treated with a bit of humanity, and we can say that that's right. It's a declaration. You're right. Just like any kind of declaration, and you can disagree or agree.
Do I have a right? Do I saying, have a right? Do I have a right to take something from somebody else?
I think most cases, no.
Okay, then that's what that is. She saw no excuse for the seven members who switched their vote.
Shame on the rest of you for caving to corporate interests. I beg you, in the name of
45,000 individuals signed the petition.
Of all that is holy, in the name of God, in all her names, to do what is just and merciful and right.
Don't be bringing God up at a city council meeting. Don't bring God up with those guys. You don't see them in church. A woman said,
they're on your opposite side, John. That means you're siding with the wrong side, apparently.
Well, apparently her God's a woman.
So?
My God doesn't have
case
a gender.
Closed.
My God has no gender.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of my God.
Right.
Okay?
Oh, is it God's transgendered?
No, God has
that's
no gender. God doesn't have a gender. Doesn't hey, have
we're
a gender.
Talk about
we don't claim
how
God
and conservatives
to have,
see God.
I don't claim
up
God
later.
To have a gender. Although you can call him father, whatever you want to call him. Okay, woman
just don't
says
don't call him mother.
Absolutely. He has no gender, but okay. I know it's not female.
So, we cannot rely yeah. on big business and capitalism God, to magically we supply this housing that the homeless so of Seattle. Have,
oh, this is three guns. I'm surprised it didn't pass 9-0.
Well, this, I think this person is, Serafino said, votes like this show that capitalism doesn't work. Okay, can we get somebody yeah. to actually present what the people believe?
Yeah, who?
We had 45,000 people sign this thing. This is Jacob's 8th day.
Yeah.
His 8th day.
Erica's
in the ninth. Hold on. Let me ask you. Do you have music to go on each Shama Sawan?
I do, yeah.
Okay. The rule is on the Tom and Curly show that whenever Shama Sawan speaks, we soften it with Muzak underneath. This was suggested to us by a listener, and we think it's a good idea. So here comes.
Well, why don't we hear from the winning side?
Well, we're going to get to it, Tom. We got 3 hours. Hang on.
Oh, we do?
All right. Here we go. You ready? She's not. It's not too much Hector in this one, so we still have the music underneath. Shama Sawan, okay. Referring to who? Because let's remember this: if you want to fight somebody, you got to have an opponent, and you got to make a bad guy out of somebody. And Shama Sawan sees the bad guy. Tom happens to have very little hair, but a hell of a lot of money.
It is magical thinking to believe that somehow you will be able to win attacks like this without making enemies out of Jeff Bezos. No, Jeff Bezos is our enemy. He is our enemy. And we have to fight big business. Do council members actually believe that by completely capitulating to big business today, somehow we are going to be in a better situation next year to win this?
Keep it and keep going. Jeff Bezos is the enemy, Tom.
Yes, and you know who else? I thought this is who you're
who else
going
is
to
the enemy?
Jenny Durkin. Do we have a clip of her going after the mayor?
Let's see. We got council member Lisa Herold explaining why she changed her vote.
Okay,
I'll give you a little of this one. Hold on.
We don't have the resources necessary to change enough minds to be successful at the polls in November. My political calculus is that there is so much more to lose between today and November that will hurt our long-term fight for progressive taxation to address the dire needs of people suffering on our streets.
Ooh. So what she
so she was she, one of the proponents of the head tax, and right. it says it broke her heart to vote against it to right. repeal it, but she realizes that if you play the long game, it's worth taking the short game loss.
So in November, they're going to ask the taxpayers to almost double their property tax for a new levy, school levy. Is it that they saw the anti-tax thing would have swept that out as well? That if you were in an anti-tax mood and the next thing on the ballot is, hey, do you want your taxes to go from like $140 property tax a year up to $249? And that money's going to go towards free college education for everybody, regardless of how much money they make, preschool, and then also K-12. Do they feel that the person would go, ooh, I don't want that tax, and I don't want that tax either? It gets them into sort of the seven and under line. They move a lot faster through it, and they decide, you know what, no taxes at all.
That, I think, was the mayor's calculation. I think the city council's calculation was this was a battle that they could not afford to win, that they did not have the resources to fight the business proposition. And so they decided, you got a bad hand, you fold, rather than, raising the ante. And I think that was the calculation that she made.
Yeah.
If you end up having a big Seattle vote against the head tax, that could set a precedent that she didn't want to sort of a set in stone. Right now, there's the movement was, as I said, this was a propitious timing on the part of the Amazon people in the business community that was objecting to this, because it was seen as the latest in an outrage. People are really infuriated. Seattleites are infuriated by the housing crisis or the homelessness issue.
Not the housing crisis. They're infuriated by the people crapping and having tents on the street.
That's right.
What they're infuriated
and so, by. And so they're dovetailing this business tax, dealing with it, with all the frustration. Right now, Seattle is boomtown, and there are all sorts of frustrations with boomtown. One is the homeless. One is, another is the traffic. One is how expensive the cost of living is in here. And so the culmination of all these frustrations were being represented by this head tax vote. And so they realized that is too big a wave to fight against. So let's have things calm down. Maybe we can figure out other aspects of the Seattle living. Things will cool off. Maybe the rental market will cool down. The housing costs will cool down. And then we may be able to address the homeless issue with, a more reasoned approach.
I see. More money. So the thing is, they're not upset about the homeless. They're upset about the government. They don't like the way the government is spending their money to solve the homeless problem. They see, we give you more, we get more homeless. We give you more, we get more homeless. Every single year, you spend more. Well, you don't know that. Every single year, how would you prove that, Tom?
Well, the same way you prove that it is.
Well, the only way, I have the solution. I have the solution. Which is, you ask the person who's receiving the goods from the taxpayers, where was the last place you were housed?
That's right.
Where did you have a roof over your head? And when they say Mississippi, when they say Portland, when they say Los Angeles, when they say comes in from Virginia, came in from Florida, when you see that, then you go, oh, I see. They're coming here for a particular reason. And what they're coming for, Tom, what they're coming for, just like you waited in a line at Denny's for a free breakfast, they come for what you will give them. That is why people are here in Seattle and not in Bellevue. Bellevue does not have a homeless problem because Bellevue doesn't cotton to that sort of stuff. Here
That's
in
right.
Seattle,
and right now,
you get what you want.
Bellevue is addressing that issue. They realize, yes, Seattle should not bear the brunt of the regional problem. And so everyone realizes, in fact, Bellevue is trying to figure out, what should we do with this shelter? We should build shelters. We should build more affordable housing because this is a regional issue and Seattle is bearing the brunt of it. And that's why Dow Constantine and the mayor of Seattle are working together to make sure that King County, they're spreading the wealth or the debit because of that. And it's true. Seattle is bearing the brunt of all the homeless. Most of the homeless come from King County, but Seattle is one who has to pay for it.
Not true. But anyway, and they don't want to know the truth. They don't want to know the truth of where they come from, because then all of a sudden the entire structure that they have developed, which is more money will eventually cause a bend in the curb, will have less homeless if we spend more money.
John, it's convenient for you to say, okay, so no more money, spend what you've got. You have no solution to the homeless problem either. You just object to all taxes, and so now this is a tax about employees and businesses. If businesses are responsible for some of the disruption here that leads to homelessness, then that's okay. Well, yes, it does. I mean, that's Even Mountain View, which is now considering doing the same head tax against a Google as they do here, they say their businesses acknowledge that,
Tom,
that they indeed are having an impact and they right. want to mitigate
but
that.
But the difference on Google is this. It's a $10 million tax overall, right? It's not $45 million.
It's a much smaller town.
Much Mountain smaller, View's and not, it's yeah. spread over everybody. It's not just Google. Now, Google will pay the most because they employ 20-some thousand people, right, that come into the city. But what they're taking that money for is they're saying, here's it's not about housing. We're going to spend that money on transportation because transportation affects everybody. So people that are driving in to Mountain View are being disrupted by the number of Google people that are coming in and out. So they said, we're going to tax $10 million, spread out over a whole bunch of businesses. Even businesses that have 50 employees will help pay a part of that. Google will pay the biggest percentage of it, and it goes towards roads and infrastructure.
I know.
If Seattle had an impact fee, which they don't have impact fees, if they had impact fees, they would have been able to mitigate a lot of these problems with transportation, but they don't have that.
That's right.
The homeless thing is pure and absolutely human beings responding to incentives, because that's the number one rule of economics, all incentive. Tom.
We just did a story, John, about a month ago about how hard it is to disrupt people. There are people coming from out of state to the West Coast like they are in every other city.
Why?
But it's not just because because their jobs here. They think the weather is better in California. That's a big draw. The idea here is that most of the people that are homeless here are not from out of state. Well, we know that as much as we can.
Of the 1,500 people that they surveyed, Tom, of the 1,500 people they surveyed, the question they asked, not where did you come from, the question they asked was this. Where was the last place you got services?
That's right.
That's an interesting question to ask somebody because you don't really want to know the real answer, which is, I came from Texas or I came from Virginia.
What is the real answer? Where was
the last place you got services? King County. And then they said,
that's right.
So you must be from King County.
Yes,
a joke.
Yeah, but the problem is most of the people that are homeless now weren't homeless when they came here.
They became homeless because of that.
What do you mean? You don't know what you're saying.
You don't know
I did. Yes, in all those studies that we did,
we're taking a field trip. We're going to go on a field trip, and we're going to go out and ask people, and we're going to videotape it.
John, you're from Philadelphia.
Yes.
So if you suddenly lost your job and were homeless, did you come here for that? No. People came here. Seattle was a different place years ago.
Tom, they came here for a job. Let me get this straight. They came here for a job. They had perfectly good skills, and then they ended up becoming homeless and doing drugs on the street.
Not all of them, no.
Okay.
The idea is that people do come here, and then they lose. It used to be affordable to live here. In the last 5 years, the cost of living has shot through the roof, and that ends up, talk about your trickle down. There's your trickle down.
Uh-huh.
They end up having no place to live. There's no affordable housing. There's no low-income housing. The shelter beds are overflowing.
So why wouldn't you go back to where you came from?
Well, we just did a story about that because it costs a lot of money to go back.
Okay.
How does it, you have to just live on the street. Some people prefer
just
to live on the
street. Live on the
street. Trying to figure out enough money to get back to Iowa.
We'll take a quick break. Iowa. Send him back to Iowa. It's the worst thing you said all morning. All right, here we go. We'll find out why millennials think, half of them think they're going to be able to be this at some point in their life.
Wake up call coming your way. Yep.
Keel Mortgage. 1-888-778-KIEL. All your mortgage needs. CL 53969. Good people working there. They want to help you. If you need a pre-approval letter, heading out shopping, looking for a house, good luck. Get the pre-approval letter. Let people know you're with a serious mortgage company that's going to make sure the loan goes through. All right. Let's see. The millennials. Now, we always talk about millennials. They were born from 1981 to 1996. There you go. Everybody after that's another one that we can hate later on. But right now, let's hate the millennials because they're younger.
And better looking and richer. Yeah. Screw them.
Okay, moving on. Next topic. How about that raccoon climbing up the side of the building?
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay. Hang on. In a recent survey, one more reason to hate this group of people is because when they said, hey, do you think you're going to become a millionaire? What did they say, Tom?
53% of them said, heck yes. Look at Kylie Jenner can do it. Why can't I do that? What does she have that I don't?
You know, I try not to dismiss an entire group.
Yes.
It's tiring. I'd rather dislike people on an individual basis.
Right.
But when you ask
which
them,
you're quite good at.
Thank you, Tom. But you ask them, more than half say they will become millionaires.
Yes.
Did they explain where this illusion comes from?
No. I think it's the optimism of youth.
Okay.
I wonder if, you know, like a baby boomer generation, if we didn't think, oh, yeah, why not?
No.
Because you don't have the world to tell you not. yet. You don't have enough world experience to realize, oh, this is a it's harder road to hoe than I expected. But yes, they do think that, although I think we should start lending some sympathy to that generation. By the way, both my daughters are in this group. We had just done a story last week talking about how they're the ones that it's the millennial group that was hit hardest by the recession.
Mm-hmm.
They have the biggest amount of college debt.
Right.
And they were hit by the recession. So for a good 3 or 4 years, there weren't any jobs. And now that the job market is rebounding, mm-hmm. they say they are the one group of all the different generations, including the generations younger than them, are not rebounding as well, that they actually saw a pretty significant cut. 34%, these are families headed by someone born in the 1980s, which would make them millennials, fell 34% below expectations in 2016, the most recent year there is, for data. So they are kind of like stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing we should maybe say is that optimism that, yes, we're going to become millionaires also might be an indication that they are not letting the circumstances of their birth, the timing of their birth,
mm-hmm.
Kill their optimism.
Well,
that'll take another decade or two.
Do they ask them more specifically, do you feel you have a net worth of $1 million or you'll be making $1 million a year? Because 11% of Americans have a net worth of $1 million.
Okay.
So maybe they're living in Bellevue and they have a house that's now worth $1 million, but they're not making $1 million a year. So the question is, do you believe that your annual income, because then you're in a really small percentage of Americans, I think you're down like what, less than 1%, will you make $1 million a year or do you believe you will be a millionaire on paper? I guess they didn't get specific enough on
no, it. Expect to be a millionaire someday. And so that they also here, as long as we're dealing with the optimism of youth elements,
yes.
they also expect to retire at 56, though they won't start saving for retirement until 36.
Oh, God.
But so they're hoping that they'll be able to retire early, which is funny because most of the people that I talk to that are my kids' age say, oh, no, you know, retiring early, that's the last thing. We're going to have to retire forever because we have to pay for the baby boomers to get through all of their, they don't think we're not going to have Social Security, but we have to pay in Social Security to pay for all, you know, their parents' generation of upkeep since they're living longer. A couple of other interesting stats about them. A quarter of them don't expect to ever get married, and 30% of them expect never to have children.
Okay.
So that might help the millionaire. If you don't have as many kids, you don't have to, share the wealth with your kids as much. Maybe they'll give them some chance. But they still have, high rates of debt, student loans, credit cards. So they're up against it, but at least we can point to the unrealistic optimism.
Well, you have a society that is constantly pumping images of rich people flying in jets and having cars. We didn't have that. You know, the richest person I could think of when I was a kid in the 70s was the DuPont family.
Okay.
So the DuPont family lived in Delaware. I knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody, the DuPont family. It's like, oh, I'm related to the DuPont family. Or the Pugh family. Pugh started Sun Oil or Sunoco. Those were the rich people, the millionaires. But you weren't constantly opening up your Facebook page and seeing somebody flying around in a private jet or seeing, you know, what had any of that. So you weren't aware. Could you name of somebody who was a famous millionaire when you were coming up?
Well, I mean, yes, but they were the Kennedys.
Okay.
The Kennedys were like the perfect mark. They were rich, you know, they were rich people. And so that was the whole Camelot idea. And it was, we know, I never identified, I mean, they were Catholics, but other than that, I never identified with them. I was never going to be in that ilk, but it is true. They were the image, but it was like being a movie star. It was sort of like this unreachable goal. Now, it is true. There are a lot of people like Kylie Jenner. They list all these family. I mean, look at Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg's 34 years old.
Right.
He's one of the richest men in the universe. That's what they kind of see, and it's true. By the way, Massachusetts is the best place for millionaires to make money while still affording their cost of living, followed by Minnesota and North Dakota. The worst place, Mississippi, then Florida and Louisiana, the three worst places for millennials to make money.
To try to make it. And then they have a little piece, just sort of a companion piece to them, that is, when do you need to start saving in order to become a millionaire, and how much money do you need to put away? It's not that much. I always keep telling the kids, hey, put away $4 a day right now, starting right now. You'll have $1 million by the time you're 130. So let's let's get on it.
Oh, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. Well, one of the things I say is that if you start saving $10,000 at the age of 25, like my youngest daughter, that she would have $1 million by the time she's 55.
Okay.
But
hold on. She has a 401k. She takes it right off the top, pre-tax. Government doesn't get a chance to waste it.
Yeah.
And then the her company matches it, maybe a dollar for dollar, 50 cents to a dollar. No?
I would guess most people at age 25 aren't working for companies that have 401ks. She does not have that. And by the way, she's living in New York City, so it's her own fault because it's expensive as hell to live there. But most people at the age of 25, it's not like they're spending $10,000 willy-nilly. Oh, you should have saved that.
Yeah.
They don't. They are living, you know, in effect, paycheck to paycheck. They're living cheap lives, and they're, you know, renting with other people in the to afford the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true, if people could look that far ahead, most people, I think, see more immediate demands. I don't think that if you don't start saving until you're 36, which is what millennials say, that somehow you were wasting your money.
Let's go into the basement and talk to a millennial. Hold on.
Let's do that.
Andrew.
Yep.
There he is.
I'm not sure. When were you born, though? I'm not sure.
I'm not a millennial. I looked it up. I was born 98, which is just a couple years after the millennial. So I'm a Gen Z.
Hang on.
But we do have another millennial here.
Let me close the door.
Shut him back into the basement.
Get back into the basement. Jacob.
Yeah.
Jacob, your father and I want to talk to you. Jacob, get off the porn machine. Jacob, do you take advantage of the 401k that Bonneville offers?
I do.
Okay. At what percentage are you putting into it?
I think I'm at 5%.
Okay. Why wouldn't you give more? You can give more.
Yes. I don't have a good answer. At 5 just seemed like a nice round number.
Right back. There we go. I heard that music. I said, well, what's going on? Why is anybody talking? I realized, oh, it's me. So I should say something, Emery Martin.
Saw that dead air.
I was busy reading about the word imago, which was the word that was used in the Bible referring to God was made in man. God made man in God's image. And what has happened is over the years, it has been redefined to image. It was actually imago, I-M-A-G-O, meaning imagination. So God made man in God's imagination, not in God's image.
Wow.
So because of that.
It's very different.
Exactly. See, now you know why I didn't go to traffic right away.
That's right.
All right, because then this is important to understand when a question was asked to people, what does God look like? People then decided, okay, well, if man was made in God's image, well, then God must look a little bit like we do.
Yeah, an obese, middle-aged white guy.
Or with a beard, or maybe no beard. Or maybe he grows a beard for a little while and he shaves it off. But so now people have been asked, what does God look like? Liberals and conservatives are different ideas, a North Carolina study finds.
That's right. Now, and it's a very specific group of people being asked. They're 551 American Christians.
Okay.
So we're establishing just this this small pocket. How do they project themselves into God, or how do they project God looking? And liberals and conservatives had a slightly different take.
Mm-hmm.
They say, for most part, conservatives see God as a kind of a powerful being. And so, yes, he tends to be white and male if you're white and male.
Mm-hmm.
But he also is kind of like the way we used to in Catholic school. We used to talk about the Old Testament God and the New Testament God. The Old Testament God was, you know, the very, you know, authoritarian kind of patriarchal mm-hmm. God who told you what to do and demanded that you do it. And the Jesus God, the New Testament God, was somebody who was more forgiving, and he was a God of mercy as opposed to a God of demands. And that's sort of what they say in this point, that the liberals see God as a bit more feminine and loving as opposed to authoritarian and mm-hmm. calling you to account. They also say that for the most part, you tend to project your own self. So if you're white, you project it as white. If you're African-American, you see him as African-American. They say the one surprise, if there is any surprise in this survey, is that women tend to see God as male, just like men tend to see God as male.
Uh-huh.
So despite the, you know, God was a female as a popular bestseller out, all this, in this case, I don't know what you call it, the patriarchal idea of God as male still persists for them.
I thought liberals would see God as Barack Obama.
Maybe if you're African-American.
Sure, right? He's Barack Obama. But the question is that why does God need a gender?
Well, in fact, he doesn't. They quote, it's interesting because of the background you just gave, because in this particular article, they say that, you know, some say he was made in, you know, man was made in God's image. But in other cases, he is like not embodied at all, or can't be right. Determined.
He has a big white dress on kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's floating around.
That's right. So that's
right. Thank you, Tom.
You're not even listening to me. I know exactly.
What did I say?
Big white beard with a long flowing robe. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a dress, not a robe.
That's right. It's a robe.
A robe would have a tie, and he'd have to tie it. It would be opening up all the time like an old man's robe.
Liberals believe in a tolerant society better regulated by a loving God.
Like the government.
Yes.